You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 18th. 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means? Cliff Schechter will be here to talk about this crazy, crazy week. Also on the program today, to give me a streaming movie recommendation, comedian, writer for the show, Marin, Dave Anthony. Also, I have to say, one of the best, he used to maintain a political blog that was one of my favorites. And then he stopped. On the program today, of course, more on Obamacare. That's going to be the new we're going to hear quite a bit about it, I should say, over the coming weeks. Real problems in the national health care exchange. States doing much better. Oregon, I think about 10% of its uninsured already insured now. Edward Snowden speaks, says no way Russia and China got a hold of his documents. Also, George Bush, we'll get a story about him on Iran. I wanted to read part of it. Hi, I'm one of the lesser people, or moochers, as Matt and Mike have referred to us. You guys, not nice. I like your show, but I cringe every time the first hour is described as the lesser half, or you freebies out there. Now, folks, please. We are aware that we give away the first 40-some-odd minutes of the show for free every day. We want to grow the show. We understand that not everybody's going to join. But look, you know, if the price you pay for that show is us to have a little fun, moochers is really, I do think, the wrong word, Matt.
Matt, I'm pretty sure Michael coined that.
Well,
one.
Look, guys.
Oh, really?
All right, kids, don't make me pull over the car. Now, listen. But, yeah, we call you freebie. You're getting it for free. If that's a very small price to pay, and if you don't want to pay that price, you can also pay the 33 cents a day. And if you don't want the extra material, you don't have to listen to the extra material. I would subscribe to yours if you had made me feel like a lesser person for listening to the first hour and making me feel guilty that I can't hear the better half. Well, I don't know what to tell you. If you feel guilty, it's your own fault. That's what Ann Landers would say. I downloaded the app, which I will remind you is also free, in hopes I could do more. But frankly, I'm not sure I want to. I don't understand that. I mean, I don't understand the logic there, but okay. I'd rather listen to the best of the left because he never makes me feel bad and he thanks everyone for their support. Well, no, I thank everybody for their support. Of course, I appreciate the support. But I have to say that Jay at Best of Left, he's just a nicer guy than me.
Listen, if you need someone to hold your hand,
no,
when you cross
don't
the
be
street.
Like that. Look, I will tell you that Jay has been incredibly supportive of this program. He helped me out when I was launching in innumerable ways, and I think his podcast is great. It's a great way to survey. We do something that's a little bit different here.
I think what Sam's trying to say is that there are some people that listen to the show that take responsibility for their lives and contribute, and others that don't. And we can't make all this thing.
We can't. I'll continue to be a freebie mooch because I think the information is good, and I'll have to be just content that I'm not worthy of the better half. No, you are worthy. That is exactly my point. You are worthy. We're all worthy.
So far, we've not been worthy of those 33 cents.
That's right. I mean, come
on. We're
not
worthy.
If you would like to be a member and you're not offended by our playful jesting, go to majority.fm and join today. I mean, look, it's that's what provides the vastly major, not even, it's not even close, 98% of our revenue. I mean, I haven't done the exact numbers, but it's pretty darn close.
We have been talking around the office of, I guess you can call it some sort of grand bargain where we just cut down the hours of the free show.
That's right. We will. In return for higher prices, we will cut down the show for you.
The grand bargain.
That is the
half
grand
the
bargain.
Content,
now,
twice
I will
the price.
Say this. We do have a sponsor. We rarely have sponsors on this program. In fact, I think we've had really only one. Credo did something with us last year. They're doing something with us this year. Yesterday, I described what Credo does. You can go back and you can listen to the interview with Becky Bond. We've done a couple with her. We'll hope to have more in the future. But Credo Mobile, when you are a Credo Mobile customer, 1% of their revenues goes to progressive nonprofits that you love. And I'm not talking 1% of their profits, 1% of their revenue. They don't care about maintaining access with Democrats that they, period. They push Democrats in the right direction. They fight against Tea Party candidates, nut jobs. They don't care on stepping on big funders' toes because they don't have big funders. They have you when you sign up for Credo Mobile. And that's basically our model here too. I mean, I take to heart what that listener wrote in, but I'm not going to change anything because, you know, 33 cents a day, it's helpful if a lot of people do it, but one person is not going to make me change the nature of the program. Credo Mobile is giving Majority Report listeners a special deal this month. It ends October 31st. They're going to sponsor us for the next 2 months. I don't know what the deal is going to be. I have no idea. I know this month, if you go to credomobile.com/Sam, you use the code that you see on the top of that page, you will get a $350 credit to switch over up to 350. So whatever is, if it's less than 350 bucks, they will apply whatever that figure is to your Credo Mobile bill. They will also give you 25% off your data costs. It's true unlimited data. They got Android phones. You can get the app on there for free, the Majority Report app, and you can listen to the program via the phone. You got to take advantage of this deal by October 31st. CredoMobile.com/Sam. We've got links to it on the homepage at majority.fm. We're going to take a break. We're going to go with, we'll go get Cliff right away.
Look through the window. I'm looking through a pane. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is Friday. You know what that means. You're due for one of your best entitlements. That is, of course, Cliff Schechter. And with that entitlement comes this song to bring him onto the program.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Cliff, how are you? I know you're back from Disneyland.
I am.
Or Disney World.
I am back from Disneyland. Disneyland is
It sounds like it took a lot out of you, buddy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds like it took a lot out of you. What, did you get a cold down there?
Yeah, I'm sick, man. Disneyland kills you. I mean, you know, like, you got to run to all these rides and four different theme parks and buses and pushing kids in strollers and heat, you know? I mean, it's not easy, man.
No, believe me, I know. I mean, it sounds like you had your own sort of... A government shutdown, as it were.
Well, it does, in a way, it's a good place to be because it kind of does remind you of the Tea Party a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you do have lots of big, fat, white guys walking around, you know what I mean, who, once they take their oxygen mask off for a second and stuff a slice of pizza in, it's kind of like, freedom! You know, you do whatever you want there. Everything's for sale. You know, every ride dumps you out into, like, a gift shop full of crap to buy that you know you don't need, but you buy anyhow. You know, I think it's a little bit in sort of its ultimate capitalism, consumerism, cheesiness, fat white guy heaven. It's a bit like what the country would become if the Tea Partiers took over.
And but your kids enjoyed it, right?
Oh, kids loved it, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That's all that matters, Nate. And the truth is, don't tell anybody, and I know nobody's listening, of course.
Right, of course.
But a couple of those rides are freaking awesome, and you would go on them whether your kids are there or not.
No, I've been. I enjoyed it. I had mixed feelings at different times, but it's always fun to see how the kid enjoys it as well. But
no, I mean, that is the best part. You watch the kid, the looks on their faces, and it is a lot of fun. So. Overall fun, but yes, I did. I actually have gotten sick. I don't know if it was that or just, you know, seeing Ted Cruz on TV. It could be a variety of things, but something's made me in ill health.
So we're finally out of crisis mode. We have the government funded through January 15th, still at sequestration levels. This was sort of pre-negotiated, I guess, before we went into this whole manufactured crisis. The debt limit will be extended to February 7th. And then I think the Treasury can use extraordinary measures and income verification for recipients of subsidies under Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, back pay for furloughed workers. So here we are.
The regular party, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, here we are. We're back to where we were months ago. The progressive agenda is still something that just seems to be something that is unattainable. I mean, you know, what we really need at this point, I know you know this, is jobs. We need to stimulate the economy. We need more government spending. I don't see any way that we're going to get it at this point.
No, I mean, who knows how we could possibly get it. I see what the president is doing. Maybe he's, you know, they're claiming they're doing it because of it's their policy agenda, and it is partially their policy agenda, part of it. But bringing up immigration reform now, I think you and I have talked, it seems to be part of a strategy to further drive Republican funders, the corporate class of the GOP that got so pissed off at how these guys basically almost took the economy down, you know, away from, because it's another issue, of course, where the corporate side of the Republican Party supports immigration reform, and the nutty, you know, nationalist loonies don't. So we may get that, but you know, I saw today where they were reacting in the way you'd expect. I think one of the House members was like, after Obama wouldn't sit down with us and was so mean, and I think it was Raul Labrador, who is appropriately named after a dog. What am I saying that people don't already know? I don't see what changes with this House. The Republican Party, they're not logical, rational players, the base of the party. They're running completely on emotion, obviously, and not on common sense and not on anything resembling science and what happens in the real world, as they were about to let the debt ceiling deadline pass and chaos ensues. So, I mean, to think that just because they lost and because most of the country in an enormous way opposes them, and because now even Charlie Cook and Stu Rothenberg are saying that the House is up for grabs because their numbers have cratered. The Tea Party has the lowest favorability rating, I think, ever. I think 21% or something. The Republican Party is down to its lowest favorability rating since Pew started looking at these numbers. The Democrats have an 8-point advantage in the generic ballot. Most people say a 6 or 7-point advantage would be enough to take back the House, because you'd get such a wave that in districts that aren't really even swing districts, some of them, where you already have a +5 Republican advantage or even more, they could lose. But these are all we're dealing in reality right now. And these, you know, this is the place where Ted Cruz says that Obamacare is going to be the end of the country as we know it, and stands up and says that the people are behind them.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess a few of his relatives and paid staffers, although I don't even know if they're staffers upon them anymore. They tried to take away their health care. So,
well, you know, I mean, here, I mean, this is, you know, I was on Hayes's show last night, and I made the point that, I mean, and we're going to get into this because, you know, and this is going to come as no surprise to regular listeners of this program, but you and I are brothers from another mother when it comes to Social Security, as they say. The bottom line here is that we are not going to, I mean, I don't think we're going to see a repeat of this hostage taken by the Republicans, at least not in the months leading up to an election, because I think the numbers you've just talked about, at the very least, they must be aware on some level, like, this is not going to work again. They're not going to try it, I think, in the with the idea of an election looming, you know, 7-8 months away. So I don't think we're going to see that, and I'm talking about in January and February, I guess 11 months or whatever it is. But you know, the real question here is, what should be the agenda? And I think the other thing that people have to understand is the president's agenda, and it still just sort of shocks me based upon the reactions I got from some Obama bots on the on Twitter after I did Hayes's program. The idea that President Obama has a shared agenda with progressive allies in the Senate or the House, in some things, of course, I think there's an intersection. But in other things, people have to understand that President Obama is now working on his agenda. I mean, excuse me, his legacy. He has right. his agenda. The Democratic lawmakers have their agenda. Their agenda involves getting reelected and trying to take back the House, maintain the Senate come the fall. For President Obama, his agenda deals with his legacy. And I think he also has a real strong fetish when it comes to balancing the budget. I mean, he keeps saying it over and over again. And the bottom line,
he just sees that as when you talk about legacy and everything, you're correct. He sees sort of bringing the budget in balance and being remembered as a guy that cut spending and brought government in balance and reformed unreformable programs and all the rest of that. He obviously sees that as a part of his sort of serious person credentials. And yes, immigration reform, gay marriage, guns, there are a variety of issues where our priorities are, in fact, yes. right in line with the president's priorities. But, you know, all you have to do is look at history and you can pretty much understand where that is. I mean, there's even certain economic issues. I'm quite sure that he would support raising the minimum wage, for example. But when it comes to balancing the budget and what would be the priorities there and what he'd be willing to give away to get some of the things that he wants, no. I mean, you know, I guess in some of the things like raising revenues, we're in alignment with him.
Well, I'll tell you, this is what's interesting about this is that
Ezra Klein had a piece in Bloomberg, which he basically reran, I guess, today in the Washington Post, saying that the higher taxes shouldn't be the Democrats' top priority. And I tend to agree with that from a policy standpoint. And it was interesting. I think Ryan Cooper had a piece today floating the idea of what the Democrats should do going into these negotiations and say, okay, we will trade you because, you know, we know that the Ryan plan, for instance, supposedly deals with the deficit. It doesn't. It actually grows
makes
the deficit.
Deficit worse.
And look, at this time when we are suffering this sort of, you know, if not technical, sort of practical recession, the idea of raising taxes is, it seems to me, should not be a priority.
Actually, that's been what's been the problem the whole time here, is like we've got these sort of arguments going back and forth that when you put them alongside each other, don't make any sense.
Exactly. Exactly. Because the Republicans come in and say,
we need to balance the budget.
We want to balance the budget, but we want to cut taxes. Well, of course, you know, that it doesn't work that way. We have now cut, you know, discretionary spending down to the bone. And so Ryan Cooper had a floated something for a deal, which, of course, will never be accepted. But it would be the Democrats come in and say, we'll give you $1 trillion worth of we'll give you a bunch of tax cuts for $1 trillion worth of basically fiscal stimulus. And that's a deal that I certainly would take in a heartbeat, because that's what we need to do. We need to get this economy going again. But it's not going to happen.
Right, and to be clear, for things that would stimulate the economy, real things, spending on real programs, on jobs programs, and other things, I've been saying, screw the budget right now. Deficit picture has been getting better anyhow. Austerity is stupidity. It's forgotten history that we repeat again and again. And it seems like, you know, there's people that have an interest in us forgetting history. You know, whenever you sat there and thought to yourself, why did the Republicans do what they did? Why did Herbert Hoover not act in a more aggressive way? Or any other time during a recession, you know, I mean, a lot of things I thought to myself, you know, that I didn't understand, whether it was in the 90s or whatever, how they could have ever happened. We've now seen it all happen, haven't we, right? I mean,
right.
So when you thought, well, how could the Red Scare happen? And then there was 9/11, and we saw what happened with Muslims. And so, I mean, you know, it's we've been living a lot of that, and it's the same thing with this. I mean, this is not, you know, the fraudulent Niall Ferguson aside, in the real world with people that use real numbers to back up what they say and rely upon crazy things like science and history and the rest, we know what works here. This isn't a question. You know, we know that if we were to there's money out of the economy, people are unemployed, they're not spending money. We know who people are who do spend money. We know that things like unemployment insurance increase. We know that a minimum wage raise. We know a bunch of these things would put more money in people's pockets. They'd spend more money. We knew that jobs programs would do the same thing. I mean, hell, this thing could have been over 2 years ago, probably. You know, maybe longer ago. If we'd done a stimulus twice the size of Obama's, which many people like Christine Romer knew we needed. You know, or at least 1.5 times the stimulus that he did, then this thing would be, you know, who knows where we'd be. I mean, sequestration right now, according to a variety of numbers I've looked at, has a 0.8% higher unemployment than we would otherwise be at.
Literally, I think 1.5 million people are unemployed because we would have a million more jobs at this point were it not for things like the sequestration, all the austerity policies, and so, you know.
And of course, let me just finish this one thought on that. And of course, in the end, the budget ends up coming into balance when we've got prosperity.
Right.
Because what happens is people have jobs, they make more money, they pay more in tax revenues, and the government ends up bringing more in. So all this austerity garbage has nothing to do with any of that. It's people that hate the thought of the government spending money on anything. That's what they want. They want to cut all that. They want to privatize everything. They want to personally gain more power and become more rich. It obviously has nothing to do with. Because you can fix both of those problems with this one thing, by stimulating the economy. So, I mean, yeah, I take that trade, too.
I would
do a bunch of things like that for short-term trades with the Republicans. I would negotiate. I'm somebody who believes in principles, but I'm not an imbecile like someone like Ted Cruz or half that damn party that refuses to – I mean, obviously their ideas also don't happen to work, but I mean people that refuse to sit down. I would, if there were people that you can negotiate with in good faith, I would do that. and I'd give up a few of my priorities because that's how government works, to get the economy moving again. But these guys won't do that. We know they won't do that, so it doesn't even matter.
And the issue I took with Ezra Klein's piece was twofold. One is he's saying enter into these negotiations and give up the call for higher taxes, which, you know, this is a question of tactics. And we're going to see there's a vacuum here, right? I mean, there's it's a question of people running in to fill this vacuum. We know that they're like the fix the debt people. We could talk about that little Twitter exchange that happened yesterday, but we know the fix the debt people are coming in because there's an agenda out there to cut Social Security and Medicare. It is, the idea that people would tweet at me and say, like, how can you say President Obama wants to cut Social Security? Look at his budget. Look at his budget. It calls for cutting Social Security.
Because he said it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't know that he wants to do it. Look, I don't care what's in his heart. I mean, it's just like, you know, this is like, he's like a child. Like, you know, he's sitting there at night. Like, he really, he's like, no.
I had these kinds of fights with people, you know, when the Syria thing was going on too.
Right. I mean, look,
I felt pretty passionately about that. Oh, he doesn't really want to do that. You know, I'm like, well, you know, he's saying and getting us in a position to do that. And these things have a way of spiraling out of control. So if he doesn't really want to, he shouldn't be saying it.
And so the idea, I mean, people have to understand that the call for higher taxes is the leverage point to prevent a deal, a grand bargain. It is the poison pill that people who want to protect Social Security and Medicare know that needs to be in any type of budget discussions, because it's the one poison pill. Yes, it's the one poison pill that will keep these things from going forward. So the idea that somehow, and the idea that the Republicans are going to do anything at this point that is going to help the economy is just, I think it's just wishful thinking. And I have no problem pursuing it if it means trading away taxes. But the problem is that taxes right now end up being the poison pill that closes things. And just to edify my point, after I was railing on Ezra Klein about, his piece calling for this sort of unilateral disarmament because it's not going to happen. No one's offering it because they think it's going to happen. They are offering it because they are using this. And this is where, you know, this is what is so just frustrating. They are using it because it's the only way to prevent a deal being made to cut Social Security. And yesterday, to get out ahead of this, and one of the reasons why we had a situation where the Republicans had to back down on this whole debt ceiling thing was because Harry Reid basically took the lead in these negotiations or non-negotiations. He prevented
Biden
exactly from jumping in. There was a piece, I think, around the 12th. I don't know what if it was in.
I read it too.
It was on Delaware Online. I don't know where it came from, but it was from the News Journal, Washington Bureau, about how Biden had been sidelined essentially because we know that in the last fiscal cliff showdown, he came in, undercut Harry Reid, made a deal with McConnell, and of course he's being sent by the White House. So Harry Reid came out yesterday and preempted all of this talk by saying, there's no way in a million years I would negotiate the sequester cuts for Social Security. Remember, this was the original plan to get to a grand bargain. We're going to have the sequester cuts. It's going to bring all parties to the table, and this is going to end up being a grand bargain. And he's basically saying, I'm going to defuse this right now. It's not going to happen. The AFL-CIO came out and said the same thing yesterday. And my point on Hayes last night was, who do you think these people are talking to? They're not talking to the Republicans. They are saying to the White House, don't try it. Do not try it. And he said, if they were to give us, you know, Harry said, if they were to give us increased tax revenues, well, then maybe we could talk about it. But he knows they're not going to. And so this is a poison pill that he is putting in this. And any other deal that may come up is one thing. But do not trade away entitlement cuts. You want to call them social insurance, Social Security, because those last forever. The sequestration ends. going in the out years, you start to see these discretionary spending starting to rise again. And it's the Republicans who are going to have to cut another $20 billion from defense, not from non-military discretion cuts for the sequestration going forward. So that's where the leverage lies. I'm sorry to just pontificate.
No, I do that stuff here, too. I mean, people forget that the whole point of sequestration originally was that using common sense and logic, which are things you can't use with this Republican caucus, and thinking, well, let's put these cuts in place that will be so draconian and deadly that no one will ever allow them to happen. And of course, these guys will allow them to happen and did. You know what I mean? I mean, these guys could be like in the pit and the pendulum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, and you could be like, you must negotiate or the pendulum will come. And they would sit there and they would just get chopped into pieces because they're idiots. There's no reality that dawns on them. Or, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's the debt ceiling or the overall budget picture or anything else for that matter, or any basic science that any of us have learned over the last 150 years. They have their own agenda, their own ideologues, and that's what they follow. And so there's just again, to think you can negotiate in good faith and you're going to sit down, we're going to hammer these things out and get stuff, it's just a waste of time.
And
I wish it weren't, but it is, and Social Security would never be in any common sense budget. First of all, it doesn't add to, obviously, it's a whole different pool of money. We've gone over that a million times, but it's not something that would be a part of this anyhow, because when you know there is a program that actually puts money in people's pockets, which they potentially spend, and you have numbers and proof that it's been such a successful program in keeping people out of poverty, why would that even be on the negotiating table?
Well, I mean, the only reason why it would be is if you felt that part of your legacy was going to be helped by the idea of having gotten entitlement reform. And this is what is so frustrating to me, is that right now what the president should be doing, and he's doing it to a certain extent, is going out and making comprehensive immigration reform the big fight. They should also be going around talking about the minimum wage. Those are things that that are great leverage points. They you have the vast majority of the country supporting both those measures. You also have it is also important for young people who you need to drive out to the polls in 2014. And the idea that
it's good policy and good politics.
Exactly.
You know, unlike the Republicans who, before every election, would be like, you know, in the past when these were things that would be tough for Democrats, would be like gay marriage and partial birth abortion, and they would try to get Democrats. Well, we should have these guys vote on all this stuff. As you said, 70-something percent of the population supports the minimum wage increase, I think including a majority of Republicans. You know, I mean, let's see where you all stand on that.
And the bottom line, though, is that the AFL-CIO, the majority leader in the Senate, every group from, you know, whatever it is, from Credo, from Move On, from the PCCC, from, I mean, all across the board, all of these groups should not have to be expending resources and time and energy and mobilizing people to prevent the cutting of Social Security. It cannot happen if the president does not push for it. It just will not happen. And the bottom line is that everybody should be on the same page at this point, moving forward and taking the fight to the Republicans, because the only way the president's going to have any part of his agenda passed, the parts that we like and the parts that will have electoral advantage, is if you're able to turn the House, to flip the House. That's the only way it's going to happen. And
you do that by passing some of these good policies we're talking about, which also have the benefit of splitting up the Republican Party further and putting them in further into a ditch of their own creation. I mean, hell, you know, Mark Levin, who's just slightly less of an imbecile than Rush Limbaugh, although maybe not, just called for conservatives, for everybody on the right, for all Republicans, I don't know if it's Republicans or conservatives, to boycott the Chamber of Commerce. Like, these guys are about to go to war with each other. So if I'm President Obama, you want to sit down and make a deal with somebody, go sit down with the Chamber of Commerce and some of these conservative funders and talk to them about how they can get Boehner to allow a vote on this thing on the floor and get you a similar number of you know, very conservative but maybe slightly sane Republicans as just voted for the bill the other night.
There is scenario in the world where the Democrats entering into negotiations on anything by saying we're not going to pursue tax increases that the absence of them coming to the table with that posture is going to bring about anything. It's just an absurd premise. And it really is just, again, I think, just opening the door, take the poison pill out of the negotiations so we can get to where, you know, we want in terms of entitlement reform. And that, I mean, that to me is, you know, and I agree on a policy level. You know, we don't need new taxes right now. That should be very low on the agenda. But this is not about, we're not in a position in any way, shape, or form to make good policy in this environment. It's just not going to happen. And if anything, the sequester should be proof of that. Because, right. You know, there's sort of the poor tactics.
It never should have happened, obviously.
It should have never happened. It should have never been floated. But, you know, this is the, you know, you play with the cards that have been dealt to you at this point.
You go to war with the military you have, not the one you wish you had.
Yes, exactly. I hate to be in a position of quoting
that man, but,
Donald Rumsfeld. But,
I mean, seriously, I mean, you're right. And in the end, it's sort of like, a few people were joking on Twitter, and I was among them, of course, you know, that right before the debt ceiling bill was supposed to be signed, we were like, okay, Obama should now demand single payer or he won't sign it.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, they've just had a huge defeat. They're in a civil war, and the Senate Conservatives Fund, the group founded by DeMint, who are right-wing kooks, have now endorsed McConnell's opponent in Kentucky. You know, I'm sure the Chamber of Commerce and guys like that will come in there to defend McConnell. All these guys are going to go to war with each other. They're going to do
Tad Cochran just got a Tea Party challenger.
That's right. He just got a Tea Party challenger. They've recruited someone
Tad
to run
Cochran.
Against.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable. And
it may be the waspiest name of all time.
Yes. His opponent is supported by the Senate Conservatives Fund, the Club for Growth, the Madison Project, whatever that is.
You can usually guess if there's a good presidential name in there or something that sounds like it would be something good in American society. It's an evil group. If it has like Liberty, Freedom, Madison, you know, Washington in there. So I mean, these are all these lunatic groups, right? So now Thad Cochran has a primary, Lindsey Graham has a primary, Lamar Alexander has a primary, and Mitch McConnell. I don't know why they haven't gotten one for Susan Collins yet, but get on it, guys. There's a place where we could win. If they would primary her. And in the House, they're doing it, though. Steve King, our good friend from Iowa, with Mr. Cantaloupe Calves himself. They're going to put a Chamber of Commerce type up against him. I mean, you know.
So we're seeing the establishment people push back on. I mean, it's fascinating. And I think, you know, what's really fascinating about this dynamic, and I think that is it gets it gets so less attention than it deserves, is that I think the fundamental thing that the political chattering class does not understand about the Tea Party is that it is a complete racket. This is not to say that the rubes who go to the meetings and wear the tricolor, tri-pointed, you know, the tri-cornered hats are just scam artists. They're the ones who are getting scammed on some level. But the bottom line is there's so much money. So much money in this. The same thing that has driven the establishment Republicans, which is we want government. We want politics to function to enrich us. They use government to enrich themselves.
That's exactly that's
what the Tea Party is doing, is using essentially being out of government to enrich themselves.
Right.
And they use
government, and you know they make sure that programs get put in there for themselves, farm subsidies when they need it. They're all a bunch of hypocrites. I mean, they claim to be libertarians, but not that I don't think libertarianism in and of itself is a stupid ideology that wouldn't work in a modern society. But that doesn't even matter because that's not really what they are. They use that word, but they're crony capitalists is all they are.
I would agree, but I'm saying that guys like DeMint now, right? I mean. These guys are putting literally millions of dollars in their pocket, and they
he's gotten himself paid $1 million a year at the Heritage Foundation off of just being a jack off.
He is just literally the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's
no
hundreds,
what was it, Dick Armey, who got that deal $400,000 a year for the next 20 years from FreedomWorks to walk away. I mean, essentially, you know, Rick, I think we talked about this on your show before, how Rick Perlstein wrote a great piece, and he's so smart about the history of this stuff. You know, after signing up for, like, the email lists from, like, Newsmax, you know, and Front Page and all their crazy magazines and getting stuff sent to them by like big name conservatives about this will cure cancer. Right. Give $10. And it's, I mean, the whole thing is just a scam. It's the Nigerian bank scam. It's the same thing. It's just, they basically what they've the people leading the Tea Party, who often are anywhere from middle class at worst to sort of wealthy at this point, the Sarah Palins and the people like that. I mean, look at how much money she's made off of being a complete idiot.
Yes,
they've realized that they've you've got these people who are the same people who don't know which direction Canada is in. The same people that when Jay Leno interviews them on you know his show. Don't know what they're talking about, don't know the history of this country, can't tell you who the first president is. They're not educated, they're generally older, they're white. And if you hit them with enough emails about everything from penis pills to cancer cures to, you know, buy, you must get this magazine to learn about how the UN's going to come and take your golf courses away and the rest of it, you know, give $10 here, $10 there, and, you know, or $100 here, $100 there, and these guys all cough up money, and this is a multi-million-dollar industry. And these guys become rich off of it. I mean, Ted Cruz is never going to be president. I promise you that, unless there's some sort of a disaster in this country of epic proportions. But he'll be very wealthy soon because you can have 300 million people hate you as long as 2 million Fox News viewers and Rush Limbaugh listeners love you.
That's right.
Then he can do the Tea Party tour, probably get his own – I mean, look at what Mike Huckabee has done.
Right.
I mean, the guy that supposedly, like, literally stole furniture – from the governor's mansion in Little Rock, Arkansas, when he left, like literally did that. I mean, you know, now he's stealing money just from stupid people. He's doing the same thing. He wanted to become rich off of this, ran for president, didn't make it, got his weekly show on Fox, his daily talk show on radio, writes a dumb book every year or 2 years. And I'm sure he doesn't actually write it, of course. And goes around and gets, you know, people, think tanks buy it up and stupid people buy it up and he makes millions.
Well,
I guess, and I guess to identify with the average Tea Partier, he's even started getting fatter again.
To be fair, I am sitting in a chair that I absconded from Air America as we speak. So
nicely done. Fair,
but
hey, listen, I got supplies in my office here from every campaign I ever worked on. So okay, while we're being honest with each other.
But the point is, for every Huckabee and Palin and Dick Armey and Jim DeMint, there are literally hundreds of, if not thousands. I mean, they're thousands and thousands of middle managers, of people, and they're all getting paid. I mean,
that's,
you know,
right.
When
those
we hear about 200,
when
we hear about $250 million or $500 million coming from the Koch brothers in a cycle,
right.
Where does that money go? It goes
of course,
into
if you're the local boss hog in Hazard County, Georgia. Then, you know, you're making sure that you're like, I'll turn out the voters for you. You know,
indeed.
I'll do this. I'll do that. Here's $10 million for this. Five. I mean, by the time you're done, you're a local, you know, these local elites, as I would call them, all over the country. They get rich. You know,
look, I mean, you can
this.
See the model. Look, you can see the model with the fix the debt people. All right. Well, let's just cover this because I don't think a lot of people were aware what happened yesterday. Yesterday at 2 p.m., Fix the Debt, which is the group that is fronted by Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles, which is funded by a hedge fund billionaire named Pete Peterson. Their whole agenda is to cut Social Security. You remember Alan Simpson famously said there were 300 million teat suckers in this country. Erskine Bowles tried to privatize it when he worked in the Clinton administration. And so this is their agenda, and they have no constituency, zero, but they are just awash in so much money that they hold seminars and conferences, and they fly media people, and they hire,
right.
You know, former senators and former,
governors.
And just so much money. They're so awash in money. Yesterday was a perfect example of this. Some social media consultant being paid six figures said, we're going to have a Q&A. What they didn't realize is no one follows them on Twitter. They have no natural constituency. They went online for an hour and did debt Q&A. They got maybe, I don't know, hundreds of responses, and not one, and this was done clinically by Susie Kim at the Washington Post, not one of them was not a troll like me or you who were and Michael and Matt who were pounding them. I mean, it spread like wildfire. You had, you know, David Day in weighing in. You had Atrios. You had Digby. You had just people just hopped on board here, just hammering them with Professor Kelton at University of Missouri, hammering them with either facts and figures or with smart alecky comments like you and I did.
How many old people do you have to eat for one old person to get by without Social Security?
But things this like just completely...
Everything from that to actually like real numbers, it was good.
It completely exposed them as being a sham, a total sham. If it weren't for the millions and tens of millions of dollars that were pouring through that organization, they wouldn't even have the wherewithal to have a Twitter feed.
Right.
But that's all that's there. It's just the money.
Who maybe said you should buy off 50 people to show up and pretend that they believe in what you believe, but that's the whole thing. You're right. It's not that any of these local people they're paying off anywhere around the country are actually competent.
Right. That was just sheer incompetence on their part.
They should buy austerity bot accounts.
Yeah, at least have one guy making like 20 fake accounts.
Do you realize
my
what
God.
Must have happened was that these guys were just like, you know, they had this consultant come in. They've never even questioned the premise like, hey, what's going to happen if we literally have zero real constituency for this? I mean, with like zero constituency, nobody asked that question. There was probably one guy who was, you know, a hired spokesperson sitting in a room with one guy who knows how to operate Twitter, and they were so overwhelmed with negative response, they didn't even have the wherewithal to go and fake tweet themselves to ask a real question. And,
right, and then it ends up in the Washington Post as like a negative story.
Oh, yeah, it was everywhere. It was in the Business Insider. Hayes was talking about his click three. I mean, it was fascinating. But what it just goes to show you just what a graph, this is a scam. This is just a scam. And everybody who goes and works for them it's just they're scam artists. They're just, you know, we're just going to, and I've seen it. Look, I saw it at Air America. I'm not saying you can only find it in one area, but this is what is driving much of what poses as politics today is just people who are enriching themselves.
I've worked on, you know, in various places on the left, and you brought up Air America. I mean, hell, when I got my start in politics, I was working on, you know, the reelection of Bill Clinton in 96 at a firm known as Penn & Schoen. Talk about people who aren't really on the left, but find a way to get rich off of, you know, playing like they're on the left and being completely incompetent. With Mark Penn's brilliant "ignore the caucuses" strategy for Hillary Clinton in 2008, and so it's not to say this doesn't happen on the left. Of course it does. But
it's just not
just,
as much
so
money.
Much more money on the right, and frankly, let's just be honest here. The education level of those who make up the base of the right is obviously so much lower. Your average person is so much dumber, and I don't care if that makes me mean for saying that these kinds of scams, like the email lists, like what Dick Morris did last time, selling his email list to anybody and paying himself for it and all that stuff, it makes it very easy to pull off these kinds of scams because, again, you're dealing with the people who fall for the email that says, I only need your Social Security number. I have $20 million in Nigeria in a bank.
Right.
Give me your Social Security number, all their personal information, and I will send you half of it. And these people are the types of people that fall for crap like that, because that's essentially all this other stuff is, you know. And so, it does happen on the left. It happens so much more on the right. And as you pointed out, you know, Michael Lind wrote a great piece in Salon similar to this about how that the Tea Party's real strength were these local elites, and it always has been. If you think about it, to people who've compared what's going on more recently and pointed out that, you know, the people showing up with the Confederate flag at the White House, it is not an accident. This is nothing new. The media loves to portray things. Oh, this Tea Party uprising. This is the same mass resistance against segregation, the same kind of stuff that's been going on. Most of the energy for the Tea Party is in the South and certain rural parts of the Midwest and the West. That's where you're getting this from. It's the same place that you've always gotten the most right-wing, you know, politics, support for segregation and everything else. And in these places, just the way you had local slaveholders who didn't want to give up their power, you know, fast forward 50 years, you know, to other people that have local companies they don't want regulated because, oh, God forbid, I have to let somebody black come in and eat at the lunch counter. It's the same thing. These local elites who have their, you know, who run these crap hole places do not want any of their power taken away. If the federal government comes in and tries to enforce any kind of equality or anything like that, inevitably they lose their power.
Yep.
So, that's what you're looking at. Anybody ever see the movie Roadhouse? That's what you're dealing with.
I have seen that, actually, multiple times.
Dealing with that guy. If we could have Patrick Swayze come in and kick every one of these guys' asses, we'd solve the problem overnight, although he's not really with us anymore. Right. So.
Well, that could have been a movie recommendation, which reminds me we've got to go. But Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. I know we're going to have plenty more to talk about next week.
Yes, we will. Thanks, man.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to comedian Dave Anthony. All right, we are back on the Majority Report. My name is Sam Cedar, and on the phone, it is a real pleasure and apparently a surprise to Dave himself.
I was right in the middle of a business meeting, but this is what podcasting is all about, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we do it live here, and. This part is terrestrial, but I called you, Dave, and you had no idea who I was.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was already 9:45.
Yes, well, Dave is on the West Coast, and there you go. It's actually 5 of 1, or 5 of 10 there.
I get confused. I saw you on television last night. Throws me off. Very attractive man on television.
Oh, well, thank you, Dave. That's very sweet. Now, let me pay you a compliment. First off, I have been meaning to ask you to come and do this segment for literally, I think, years. I mean, literally years I've wanted you to come on and do this segment. And I don't know if I've ever paid you this compliment because I think this is the first time that we've actually talked in not on Twitter in maybe 10 years. I don't know. But your blog, Stop All Monsters, I thought was one of the best political blogs that I was reading at the time of any. I mean, I really thought you had a great political blog. I loved it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And then it went away.
Yeah, then you got fed up, I think, and decided not to do it anymore.
Yeah, I got really fed up. I got I just kind of had it. You know, I get the it's hard to watch sort of I had like an idea that Obama might be able to do something more, and whether it's his fault or not, it's just like it was like just hard to watch all that stuff go down. It was like, well, this is just it's kind of heartbreaking, and it just kind of it made me feel like, yeah, I don't know if anything's going to happen now.
Yeah,
with the way things are.
Yeah, I've had that feeling now and then. When did you stop doing the Stop All Monsters?
God, I want to say it was like 4 years ago now.
Wow.
You know, I think it was Obama's. I think it was his second year.
Yeah, I missed it. I thought it was great. I mean, I really it was literally a daily read for me.
Oh wow! Thanks, man.
I wanted to let you know that. And in fact, there was at various stages where I thought I would have a like some type of television program that would deal vaguely with politics. You were one of the first guys I was going to hire. Now I feel comfortable saying that to you because it's quite clear right now it's not going to happen.
Well, thank you. I accept your offer.
There you go. If we can go back in time, we can get excited about that thing that won't happen. And now you're writing for Maron's show.
I am writing. I'm writing for Mark Maron, which I'm totally loving. It's really great.
All right, tell me the truth.
It's really great. No. I mean, aside from, you know, Mark being Mark and sorry, I'm trying to get into a place. I'm sorry.
Where are you? Are you at a hospital?
I didn't realize there were going to be buzzers going off when I walked in that door. Working for Mark is great. Mark, you know, he's Mark, so occasionally he goes crazy, and then you just have to sit there and watch it and wait for it to stop, and then you start talking again.
How is he doing? I haven't spoken to him, but we've been a little contact. I heard he just ended his relationship.
He did. He's having a hard time. He's sad right now, which is somewhat of a normal state for Mark, but yeah, he's a little down, but he's getting through it.
That's good. And
yeah,
and you guys are busy working on season two. How did that happen?
That I don't know. You know, IFC's a mysterious channel. I don't know really what happens there or who makes the decisions.
Now, where are we calling you? Where exactly are you? Are you in like?
I'm in downtown Los Angeles.
Wow! And so what?
I do something called the Los Angeles Podcast Festival. I'm a founder.
Oh, really?
And we're looking at spaces right now, and we're at a hotel downtown, the Biltmore.
Very nice.
Fortuitous. Yeah, we did it this year.
Will you fly us out? Will you fly us out?
Well, you know, that's where things get a little sticky.
You just found out how much it's going to cost at the Biltmore?
Look, the Biltmore is going to work. We're hoping maybe the Biltmore, because the cost would blow for the fans.
Right.
Now, I don't know about the podcasters. We can only fly a few out. How funny are you?
Well, I mean, moderately. I mean, but the news and politics, why do podcasts always have to be about comedy?
According to our resources, that's where the growth in the audience is.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's...
Sorry.
I can tell you, based upon my own experience, that is correct.
Yeah.
And so, what else? You know, you've been out in L.A. for years and years now, right? You were up in San Francisco.
Yeah, I lived in San Francisco. I started there, and then I went to New York for a while. I was there for 5 years, I've been in L.A. for like 13.
Wow. How's that going? When are you leaving there?
It's good. I had a rough, I would say, middle patch, but I've pulled out of it now. Sam, I don't know if you know this, but having a child lights a fire under your ass to get your career in order.
And then simultaneously also destroys your career.
it's a little bit of a paradox, but yeah, that's it. So things have been going better. I'm much more exhausted, but I have a lot more going on.
Well, how old is your child now? I remember when you have a boy, right?
Yeah, I have a boy. He's four.
He's four now. And you're stopping at one.
We're done. We're good.
Yeah. That's
a
smart move.
It's too exhausting. I know you have two, right?
Yeah, I have an 8-year-old and now a 7-month-old.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot. you know, it's exhausting, but it's also weird, like, you look at the world they're growing up in now. Like, he under his life, a black president is just a thing.
Right.
Like, that's normal. And gay marriage is going to be normal. So, I don't know. It's kind of cool to see him growing up with stuff like that. Now, he might not have a school when he gets there because we live in Los Angeles.
Right.
And, yeah.
And
there's certain things I look at and I go, oh, that's pretty great. But he's not going to know what I had growing up.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I grew up in a time when I think a black president was pretty unthinkable.
Right.
Certainly gay rights were in a ridiculous place, you know. I think socially we're marching forward. Yeah. Other places we're not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, do you ever get freaked out about global warming? I mean, I look at my kids and I hear as soon as I hear a number, you know, I think I saw by 2047, I saw a study that said that New York's coldest winter will be as warm as its warmest winter now.
And yeah, that's
as soon as I hear those numbers, yeah. I immediately compute how old my kids will be.
Well, I studied in school. I studied physical geography, so I basically got a degree in how the Earth works. So I'm a little pessimistic about how things are going to go down with the Earth, for sure. It's kind of an understatement. I think we've already sort of crossed the path of no return,
yeah.
And now it's just waiting to see what happens. It's a hard thing to say to another parent.
Yes. No. But, I think I have a similar feeling, and it's a little depressing.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm mostly watching is the oceans.
Right.
Because they are dying. So that's going to be the thing to watch. Have you seen Soylent Green?
It's been a while, but...
Give me
a sense of what you were thinking this week. I mean, I know you follow this stuff if you're not writing about it. What did you think about the way it went down?
The biggest problem is that obviously we have a group who want to essentially shut everything down and just stop playing civilization. But the worst thing is that the other guys, the guys who should know better, the quote-unquote moderate Republicans, who are, in my opinion, already lunatics, but they look like they're not lunatics compared to these crazy guys.
Right.
Those are the guys who are the problem because they went along with it. So that's more scary to me than the fact that the extremists wanted what they wanted. There were so few of them. The scary thing is that the other guys went with it and are scared of the extremists. That's the problem.
Yeah, I think that's my sense as well. And I think in the context, I would put it that the balance of power has changed for whatever reason. The final straw has put on that back what was marginal, because we always had these guys, you know, growing up. But what was marginal has now been brought into the main part of the page, and they are driving the agenda. I mean, that's the fundamental difference, I think, that we're seeing now. We always had crazies. It's just that they weren't nominated to be vice president, and they weren't basically able to call the shots of how the entire Republican caucus functions.
Yeah, and it's you know, what it comes down to now is how are those voters going to respond? Are the Republicans that we've been waiting for, the sort of old school guys who are more concerned about money and less concerned about the social stuff, are those guys going to go, wait a minute, now they don't represent me on any level? because I don't want the government shut down. I still want to make money for my small business. Like, are those old voters going to step up and stop this? Or are they going to leave the Republican Party? Or where does it go? Or do they just go, no, I still want these guys to be representing me?
Yeah, I don't hold out much hope for that, frankly. Now, I think it's really, to the extent, the real question is just going to be, can you drive out those same voters who came out in 2012? Do they think it's important enough to vote out their congressperson this time? I mean, that's basically it. Those same people who voted against...
Are you talking about the Tea Party people, or...
No, I'm talking about women who came out in much bigger numbers in 2012 than they did in 2010. I'm talking about young people who came out in much bigger numbers in 2012 than they did in 2010. It's really a question of, can you motivate those people who voted against Mitt Romney to come out and vote against now their even crazier congressperson?
Yeah, Rubio, right?
Yeah, I mean, or whoever it's going to be in 2016. But can you get those people to come out and vote? And that's going to really be the real question. Just how much?
Well, I feel like we don't really know, because we are more involved in this, and we watch a little bit more closely.
Yeah.
But I got to think that people watching this felt like this wasn't the usual politics nonsense that they've been saying for years. Yeah, nothing gets done. You would have to think this felt different, because it certainly felt different to me, and I watch politics all the time. This felt crazy. This was like another step that I wasn't even expecting them to go this batshit. Oh, sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, you can now. We're in the...
Yeah, I got you. I didn't expect them to go this crazy, because the default thing was just another level of, wait a minute, what are you doing?
Right.
I can get them shutting down the government, because they've done that before, but the default business, that was another level that shocked even me.
Do you get a sense? I mean, do you do much touring anymore? I mean, as a stand-up?
Yeah, I do a little bit. I opened up for Drew Carey a lot last year, so that's not your typical audience that I'm used to.
Right. Do you get a
People
sense?
People are
of,
really...
Do you get a sense when you're doing shows like that?
I have felt for a little while that we're reaching a tipping point where something breaks. But I don't know what the response is. But it feels like we're reaching a point where people are going, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But then you get into the election cycle, and those guys know how to ratchet up the old fears and the old nonsense, and yeah, people slip into that again. But at some point, it's just not going to happen. I don't know how much longer people can take this.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Obamacare thing is insane, because it's helping so many people. Some people are going to get hurt by it. Like, people who have middle-class families who have a lot of debt and can't afford to buy insurance, they're going to have to make a decision of going bankrupt or buying it. But then again, I have other friends. I have a friend who called me yesterday and goes, my God, I'm saving $800 a month.
Right.
So it's going to go both ways.
Yeah,
but it's certainly not going to bankrupt anybody. It's going to be better for everybody overall.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think in balance, it's going to be a better situation. It's not optimal, but I think it's going to be better if they can get that website fixed. But all right, let's talk. Go ahead.
Apparently yesterday was working a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly the state exchanges are working well. The federal ones, I think, they're still trying to bring up to speed, but we'll see about that. And, you know, part of it, of course, was we're seeing the results of a healthy amount of Republican obstruction, if only because I don't think that the federal government contemplated the notion that there would be this many states saying we're not going to do our own exchanges. They thought this was a benefit for the states. They thought they were giving these states something that they wanted, these Republican governors who talk about local control all the time. But it didn't happen that way. But all right, let's move to the reason why ostensibly you're here, which is to give me a recommendation for a streaming movie. Now, you have a 4-year-old. You must experience this as well. The idea that you're allowed to go out and see a movie and leave the house, I would imagine, is a fairly rare occasion for you. Although I think you know, because you're a comedian, you could probably get away with it as saying that it's research to your wife. I'm not sure, but
I don't. I finally saw a movie for the first time in like 4 months last weekend.
So there you go. So you know what I'm talking about. Now, I think, if I remember correctly, I went to go see in a theater that Tarantino, I don't even remember the name of it, Quentin Tarantino's first movie. Reservoir Dogs together in San Francisco.
Yes, we did.
I mean, that's, I don't know if you remember. There was a bunch of us who went to go see that. I think it was like a
I remember.
Blaine. So I thought, like, I think that was the last movie that we saw together. I think this is that we shared. So I thought it would be nice that every 22 years we share this experience of a movie together.
I think it's a great idea. I think every 20 years we should see a movie together.
So maybe what we can do is coordinate our Netflix streaming or online watching.
Have you seen Marwin Call?
Marwin Call. Oh, is that the documentary?
Yeah.
Yes. What was that about? Was that about the little town the guy was making?
Yeah, it's about a guy who takes pictures of like little tiny dolls. Sometimes like G.I. Joe guys, like so just the small little ones. And the pictures were sort of amazing. And you couldn't really tell why, because you're like, well, people have done this before. But then they get into the guy's backstory, and it's just mind-blowing.
I did. Somebody actually recommended. That movie is fantastic. I think it won. Didn't it get nominated, too, I think?
I don't know if it did. Did it? I didn't see if it did or not. But that's the one I always recommend to people on Netflix, because I think it's like, it's one that like no one's heard of for the most part, and it's just amazing. I think it's the best documentary I've ever seen.
It is a great documentary, but you're going to have to go with your second best movie, because are we both going to sit and watch a movie that we've both seen again and go through all the coordination? That's going to be hard.
So one that I haven't seen?
Yeah.
Oh God, I don't know, because.
All right, well, then give me one that you have seen. Give me another one that you have seen that maybe I haven't seen. Maybe we've seen all the exact same movies.
I would. The next movie that I have seen that I think is the best movie this year that's coming out online in December is Them Ain't Ben Saints.
Them Ain't Them Saints? What is it?
Them? It's a terrible name. I think that's why no one went to see it. Casey Affleck was in it.
And what was it?
Them Ain't Being, I believe it's Them Ain't Being Saints.
Them Ain't Being Saints. I've never heard of it, but...
Because the name is so terrible that I forget what it's called all the time.
Yeah, tell me about it. I name my movie Who's the Caboose. I can assure you that the name does make a difference.
I've seen Who's the Caboose.
I know.
I recommend it.
There you go. There's a couple of people who've seen it. You're one of them.
Sent me a DVD.
Oh, well, there you that's
Los Angeles.
90% of, I think, anyone who's ever seen it has been sent a DVD from me personally.
But I saw it before that. I had seen it when it was it in theaters or
It was in some festivals. All right, so tell me about Them Ain't Them Saints.
Them Ain't, can't remember the name, Saints?
Ain't Them Body Saints?
Ain't Them Body Saints.
Yeah.
I totally know the name. Do you like westerns?
I love westerns.
Okay, so it's the best modern day western I think I've ever seen.
Wow.
Like it's not set in the old days, it's set in modern times, but it is exactly like a western, like a classic western. And it's fantastic.
What else you got? Anything else to recommend it, or just are you just going to stop it with that? I mean, I know I don't want to press a writer to be a little bit more expressive, buddy.
The thing is like so many of the movies that I've gone to have been so bad that I don't recommend them anymore.
I understand.
Is this not what you were hoping for from a writer?
No, I just thought you could be a little bit more expressive, but that's fantastic. Sounds good. You want to just like fill it in? Is it a family movie? Is this something I want to take a date to in the event that I get divorced between now and the time that the movie is available online, or what?
I don't think it's a date movie.
Okay.
But I'm also concerned that you might be getting a divorce.
No, I'm just saying anything could happen, but I just wanted to, you know, I'm giving you cues here.
You're hoping that I'll, what you're hoping is that I'll pick up the slack right now and come up with a great movie idea.
No, not a great movie idea. I'm just saying, like, the movie's great, but I just want to hear, like, it's a Western. I mean, can you compare it to something? Is it, how long is it?
I mean, it's, how long is it? I think it's 2 hours.
All right, that's great. Good stuff.
Ben Foster's in it? You like Ben Foster?
I don't know who Ben Foster is, but at least you're telling other people something.
You know, he's like one of the best character actors going. He's like one of the best younger character actors out there.
Okay. I'm not sure who I know he is, but...
I don't know if this will clear it up, but he's been in other movies.
All right. Bingo. Well, yeah. He said Casey Affleck. I'm a big Casey Affleck. Rooney Mara?
Yeah.
I don't know who she is.
She's
the girl from the Dragon Tattoo. Okay. She's the girl from the Dragon Tattoo. Look at all the work I'm doing for you.
Well, I mean, I also expected you to know who people were, like Ben Foster.
Yeah.
I like that. It's like best modern movie I've ever seen. Elaborate? Nah.
It's about a guy who gets out of he basically goes to prison and his wife is pregnant and they commit a crime together and she doesn't go to prison. She gets off and then it's about what happens after he gets out of prison.
Bingo! That's all I needed. Sold.
And there's dragons.
I love it. All right, Dave, where can people go if they want to read your stuff? I know you got a Tumblr site, right?
I mean, number one, I just got on the wrong highway.
That's fine. That's part of the adventure of doing the show.
So first I'm going to get off the 101. I'm going to get on the 10.
Okay.
I have a Tumblr, but I don't really look, follow me on Twitter. That's where I do most of my work. That's where all the action is.
All right, people can see you get into fights with Marin, and occasionally I join in.
I have a podcast that I started on my own called The Dollop, in which I just tackle one subject, and the last subject I talked about was the Tea Party.
Oh, great, The Dollop. And you do one with Barrett, too, right?
I do one with Barrett, called Walking the Room. That's the big one.
That's the big one. All right.
That's
well,
the one everybody.
It's interesting you're pushing The Dollop, though.
It is, right? Well, I want to, that's the new one.
All right. All right. I wonder if Barrett goes out there and just pushes his side projects.
He has one called Vague Stories, but it's only 2 minutes long.
All right. Do you think he goes on, shows and just promotes that one, or what?
I don't know. Well, I mean, we'll have to see now. I might have created some tension, I guess, with this.
You will after we send the clip to him.
How would you rate me as a podcast?
How would I rate you?
How would you rate me as a podcast guest? Am I like a 5 out of 10?
Where I mean, I would say, you're well between the 5 and 7 range. I'm trying to keep you on the line to see if we can get a car accident, though.
Well, now I'm in Chinatown.
Are you using a helicopter or what? Are you... All right, we got to go.
Look, I'm just trying.
Dave, Anthony, really, I'm very glad we had this chance to catch up. I do appreciate your work, and thanks for coming on. We'll do it again and next time, and maybe we'll catch you not getting lost in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that'd probably be better for me to know where I am next time we podcast.
All right. All right, Dave Anthony, folks. Thanks, Dave. We're going to put a link up to the Dollop on majority.fm. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
You didn't even check, did you? You got out of the habit of checking.
He hasn't sent one in so long.
I think here it is. I'm going to play it.
All right.
It is 50 freaky shades.
If moms are reading.
50 Freaky Shades of the United States by Jimmy Reefer Cake.
If moms are reading porno books, well, maybe yes I can. Next thing you know, Joe Sixpack is my biggest fan. But these Tea Party politicians are all clones. Jackasses in glass houses throwing stones. There are 50 shades, 50 freaky shades of the United States. And a million different ways, it seems, that our Congress masturbates away their time. John Boner is the ringleader of the freak show. He says, I'm shutting down the government, pass the Merlot. Like Osama bin Laden drunk on bourbon. They got the terror business down, sans a turban. There are 50 freaky shades of the United States, and a million different ways their Congress masturbates away their time. It's the hypocrisy that I despise. I got a message to tell about the government lies. Got weed in the lungs, I got music in my ears. I'll write another song if you'll buy me a couple beers.
Wow.
There you go.
That was one of his best ever, I think. That was fantastic.
That was a great song. I have to admit that towards the end there, I thought, are we going to hear the first song? Where pot does not play any role whatsoever. And no, he did not disappoint. Indeed, we did hear the reefer reference. Jimmy Reefer Cake, folks, allthehypocrisy.com. If you want to get more of his stuff, I think it's also available on iTunes. All right, let's take a quick break, but let's not do a quick break. I'm just going to call into the, we're going to take phone calls, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. Let's go to the IMs. It's going to be a freebie Friday, ladies and gentlemen. You moochers. God. Exactly. Bush and Chains. Sam now quoting Rumsfeld. Why the hell not? With Obama newly appointing his brownie and Majority Report adopting Cheney's financial deficits don't matter mantra, the trifecta is complete. My own random rush. Limbaugh, can you imagine if we had 45 Ted Cruzes? Marin got dumped? Oh, no. Someone should put out all office interns on high alert.
He's always got his marks. I love it. Yeah. It's like gold, Israel, Marin sexual harassment. We're idiots because of the debt or something.
What's this? White House tapeworm and drug money launderer Warren Buffett not trickling down the massive benefit that only the Fed's QE multi-trillion dollar printing of fiat brings to the peons below. This doesn't ukulele playing pea brain know that there's a housing recovery. Wells Fargo to cut 925 jobs as refinancings decrease. Moniker, no audio. Audio in and out. Libtard, Kessler, for Kessler. Hey, Sam, I'm loving the app on my iPad. I have the day off, so I can actually listen live in the IM show. I want to thank you for the education discussions you have on the show. I work in a public elementary school and normally have to shut off discussions educational policy because there really doesn't seem to be a sane point of view in the mainstream right now. It's really refreshing to hear your voice on behalf of public education, supporting teachers, keep up fighting the good fight. Trying to get Diane Ravitch on the show. Just can't seem to book her. Don't know why. Don't know why. But if you have any other recommendations, send them to us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. I've got this piece, a letter written by a mother to New York Board of Regents. I'm going to save it for Monday because it's just too heartbreaking. It's too it's just too good of an example of what is wrong with this high-stakes testing. Millington, Sam, the end of the shutdown offered a mild feeling of relief, but the praise being given Mitch McConnell for being instrumental in brokering a deal is just unbearable. Should we also start praising the family dog when it poops on the carpet and then eats it, leaving only behind a stained rug? Absolutely. I share your, you know, we're back to baseline. I think I mentioned this before. It's like, you know, hey, I didn't shoot you. You owe me for saving your life. PGH Pete. Sam, with all we hear about the crumbling infrastructure, high unemployment, and normal process lawmaking getting nuked, could we blame most of this on the crusade against earmarks? Could pork save us all? You know, there is a theory that it is much harder to have a functioning government to basically buy off some of these lunatics without earmarks. I haven't seen anybody write anything sort of done any type of real sort of scientific research on this, but I imagine it's leading to this problem on some level. And look, you know, I've never had a problem with earmarks per se. There are good earmarks and there are bad earmarks. And there's inefficiencies in all systems. I think it's a little bit, I think we're seeing that it's, you know, I don't know if the theory was that you were going to get, I don't know what the theory was behind it in terms of cutting down on the type of corruption that makes our government dysfunctional. I mean, look, there's a certain level of corruption that exists in every institution. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. It does, you know, even if it's you're talking about your local libertarian organization or small towns or. You know, I think really the only place that I know that is like corruption free would be in this office. Although now that I think about it, arguably, you know, the way that Michael works the equipment here for his own projects is some form of corruption.
Probably.
I mean, why shouldn't the rest of Aslan Media properties have the opportunities that you have? Why are you so special? Why does Intersection get to sound so good? But intra-section or four-way section or whatever the other C-section over at Aslan Media doesn't get the get the same privileges that you get. Because of cronyism, that's why. CR on the app last night, it all sounded like you were saying that now is not the time to demand no cuts to Social Security, that the struggle is immigration reform. When would be the time? It sounded like I was saying this? No. On the contrary. I was saying it's time. I wish it was time to not have to demand no cuts to Social Security.
I think we should cut Social Security. I had no.
You misunderstood.
Shocking turnaround. I wish I had a board in front of me. I'd play the Perry Mason music.
Were it not for the zombie-like desire of this administration for entitlement reform, we would not have to. But I'm saying this. Of course we have to now. But I'm saying it would be better that we wouldn't. Obama needs to take responsibility for helping create this nightmare. Maybe the person who advised him to negotiate with the Republicans in 2011 is the one who needs to be looking at the wheels. We need to fight on all fronts, social programs, immigration reform, voting rights. If he wants to take a page from Reagan, maybe it should be Nancy. Just say no. I agree. Dez222, Delaware Online is part of Gannett, by the way. Hope Feld. Wow. That's too much, Hopefeld. But the debt ceiling crisis, if the Treasury would have been able to prioritize, it would have still meant going from fiscal demand of government spending to 4% in GDP in excess. Yes, I mentioned this. We could have had a financial catastrophe and an economic catastrophe, or just an economic catastrophe. Because of gerrymandering, the GOP has more seats they barely won in 2012 than the Dems. Interesting. I will check that out. Tom Foley, former speaker, dies at 84. When running to unseat him, the GOP campaign implied that he was beating him, and talking House would have meant the representative of Washington State who beat Foley would have taken the speakership. GOPers in Washington were so dumb to believe it, they voted to unseat Foley. In lieu of Diane Ravitch, we have the author of a book on students who went to Poland, Finland, and South Korea, the best and brightest 17-year-olds who go abroad. Her name is Ripley, I believe. Can you book her? I will check it out. Sam is with Massachusetts. What's the matter with Worcester? What? What's wrong with Worcester? What's wrong with Worcester? The story of a stalled revitalization. Oh, great. I will check that out. Thank you for that. Silva, I have to ask, why should the president of the executive branch have so much sway in what becomes the law of the land, future budgetary expenditures that will exist beyond the administration's time in office? Isn't that what Congress is for? Isn't that the job of the Senate and the House? Senate and the House Democrats need to have a spine. And look, the power changes depending on reelection and whatnot. I mean, the fact is that President Obama, if you're a Democratic lawmaker in 2012, you want President Obama to be popular and to go out there and get his agenda so that he can get reelected. But we're not in that situation now. The International Herald. Did I hear you correctly? Hayes attributed the Twitter feedback on Simpson and Bowles to you. Nice. Yes, he did. He gave me a good shout out. MSB podcast. Never underestimate the stupidity of the American people. If I had a dollar for every rube who listens to the right wingers, I wouldn't need my Social Security disability check ever. Fox for Socks. Apropos, I'm at UNH Law, and we just got a new public policy institute sponsored by the Pete Peterson Foundation in big letters on the wall. Ugh. Jay Tingle, try Barber College, Roadhouse Rules. Majority Report, Zach, man, the news has been depressing lately. Can we go back to making fun of Louie Gohmert and Michelle Bachman again? In due time.
Speaking of Gohmert, on our YouTube channel today, we'll be posting something amazing.
Oh, is this going to be the Gomericans?
The Gomericans, yes, I'll post
it
today.
Do we have a song that we can use? Can we get a public domain song?
Like a theme song?
Yeah.
I grabbed the I grabbed the old USSR.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Okay. Carl Sagan, go Tigers. Freemasons wouldn't have written the Constitution. Holy Spirit told me. This situation reminded me last year when Obama was negotiating with the upper hand. He could have simply let the Bush tax cuts expire on January 1. Exactly. And you never hear it reported this way. The fact of the matter is, if Congress had shut down, had gone home, you would have had all the Bush tax cuts expire. If they came back a week later and the Democrats had put in a bill to just cut for middle-class tax cuts, the Republicans would have been screwed. Biden rushed in. He made a deal with McConnell. Made it seem like Republicans were accepting tax increases. It was a joke. Seems with the sequester, Republicans have simply held their ground and they have the upper hand, but some pundits on TV claim the fever is now broken. Ha, 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 ha. Do you trust Harry Reid's claim about Social Security? I do. Calhoun, no school today. This is the first time I'm IMing with the app. Very cool. Do you think the civil war in the GOP is overrated, as you and Cliff said? Is it all about money and they agreed won't bring them together by 2014? It is overrated. I do think it's overrated. I think we're going to see slowly the establishment start to spend money on this, but I do think it's overrated. I just think they're going to calm these guys a little bit. This is not a war of attrition. Perhaps the sonographer incident should set a new precedent. Anyone who starts spouting about Jesus on the House floor immediately led away for psychological evaluation, says you. Absolutely.
Bright Bartlett, I think I figured out how some of the conservative mind views the world and how they can oppose everything concerning government. Some cons say they believe in the free market, and they certainly do, but their trust in the free market is just a symptom of the largest belief system. They believe in a type of social perpetual motion machine. This machine needs nothing to work properly. It would work properly, but government has hijacked it for selfish reasons. Government sits atop this machine and adds things to it, takes away, turns knobs indiscriminately. This is how why they oppose the best, otherwise universally agreed upon government actions like background checks. It's simply a factual error in concerning our society came to be. It's an ignorance of history. It's a denial of feudalism. Indeed. A square. Sam, that was a masterful job the little time you had with Chris last night. Great, you got that in. Activists cannot focus on getting the vote out next year if they're watching their back from the Dems, too. Also, a shout-out to Don from Atlanta. Cedaristas look forward to your calls. I love it, Don.
I look forward to his calls.
Somebody wanted to know if Don had a Twitter handle. I don't know it. Ronald Reagan. Sam, wife and I are thinking about eventually having a child. I have a feeling, however, that your jokes about hating life with kids and the kids themselves aren't really jokes. Your thoughts. I don't hate my kids. I love my children. I don't dislike them.
You don't dislike them?
No. And
you feel
like if I hated my kids, it would be that much easier, right? Because then you weren't. But I love my kids. I can't really contemplate life without your children any more than I could. Like, what would happen if I lopped off my arms? It's just not something you can contemplate.
That's how you said that. It's actually what you just said is so sweet, and you said it in a non-sweet way. It's
well, there you go. Sweet. I will say this.
Sam
yes, they've destroyed
his kids
my life
very much. If you didn't, he'd be destroyed... like, "Sorry, I'm not going to feed you. I'm tweeting at fix the debt, son. Apologize."
Well, the only reason why that's what yesterday was just like a Twitter binge for me, and it was because it happened at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If I go home, I can't do it. But yes, they have ruined my lives. My life. Now, which is not to say that my life was so great before him, but I don't think I appreciate it as much as I do now. You have moments of completely transcendent joy, interdispersed like, dandelions on a treated lawn, and the grass is abject misery. So you have moments of joy that you have that you
and it's those types of analogies experience. That happen after you have kids, folks.
You have moments of joy that you cannot experience, I think, without children. But you pay for that with extended periods of just like, oh God.
Listen, I get your feelings on Saul because he's a baby. But from the short experience I've had with Mila coming in and saying, "See you later, ladies," to me and Michael, I don't see how she's anything but
entertaining.
She seems
happened.
Like she's a
literally
a 15, fun person to be around.
15 minutes before Saul was conceived, when Mila was like seven, maybe even like six and a half, I can't remember. I distinctly remember going like, this is great. Like, I get my life back, and now I have a kid, and she's fun. You know, sometimes she's a pain in the ass, but, you know, I live with John Benjamin for an extended period of time. She is no more or less immature than he was. And, you know, but she...
He how old was he when you lived with him?
He was in his, I think, late 20s. And, you know, I watched the Sox game, like first thing in the morning, she comes in, she's like, "Who won last night?" I mean, it's fun. So I would say, if you can have a child and then just check back in with them around age 4 or 5.
I agree. I would totally.
And then pick them up again when they're like 6 or 7. That's the way to do it. No, I'm not saying don't have kids.
Just adopt a 4 or 5 year old and take it from there.
Radonna, first time listening live. Thanks to the app. Love the show. Love the Chuckle Brothers in the background. Movie recommendation. Dirty War is now on Netflix and other places. Oh, yeah. I got to check that out. Right, Pop Phil. It's disgusting that Obots refused to see Obama's willing to pay for the ACA by cutting entitlements and how sick that is. I don't know that he's, I don't think that's what the, I don't think that's the case. But, I mean, I suppose, you know, money's fungible, you know, I don't know. But let's take a quick call. You're calling from a 954 area code. Who's this?
Hi, Sammy. It's Michael from Miami.
Michael from Miami. How are you, Michael?
Good, buddy. Got chewed out from not calling on Friday last week, so, or admonished.
I appreciate you doing it.
Listen, by the way, good segment with Cliff today, as always. But I was just curious, based on what you guys discussed, that narrative that you guys advance, it never sees the light of day in the mainstream media. It never gets there. I mean, except for maybe Chris's show, which you did well last night. It's very hard to break through that cycle of noise. I mean, for instance, with the ACA, all you're hearing about is the website problems. Nothing is talked about regarding, you know, whether or not people are actually benefiting from this, what kind of reductions in bills. I myself already received a rebate as a result of my insurance company having already spent more money than they should have or less money than they should have on providing medical care. But you don't hear those stories.
Yeah.
Everything else is a wall of noise. I don't know how you get around that, my man.
I mean, I think it's going to take a while for the Obamacare stories to come out. I mean, look, there's a natural trajectory here. And, you know, the website is a valid story because that is how people are going to get their benefits. And over time, I think you're going to hear more and more about it. But, you know, it makes for more fodder, frankly. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. And but I don't think that's the impact people are feeling. There's one of two things that are happening right now out there.
Right.
People are either desperate to get health insurance and are frustrated by the computer system, but excited to get health insurance. Or they've gotten health insurance and they're very happy, or they've gotten a rebate, or nothing's happened and their life just goes on. And so I think that this is at worst going to be a non-issue in a year. And at best, it's going to be a major positive for the Democrats.
Right. And the argument is always going to be, well, your government can't handle this, and look how lousy they did in terms of the rollout. And if they can't handle the website, how are they going to handle the administration of the program, which has some basis in validity? But
no, you know, but that is the program. I mean, look, the reality is this.
No, it's not. The program is pre-existing conditions are gone. Lifetime caps are gone. 26 and under, you know, you're on your parents. That's what matters. That's what
no,
counts.
But my point is this.
I mean,
look, in terms of
A to B,
but Michael, but Michael,
important. But until you get there, you can't,
Michael.
You know,
No. The pre-existing conditions, all that stuff applies to stuff that has nothing really to do with the exchanges. And to the extent that there's a program, it is the exchanges, and it's all administered by private entities. I mean, they just got to get what we call the website, which is the exchange. They just got to get it down. That's it. Once that's done.
In my state, we have about, I'm going to say, 2 to 4 million uninsured, probably more, okay? Because obviously Governor Skeletor decided he didn't want to go in the direction which would, you know, obviously lend itself to any kind of credence, especially with elections staring him down the road next year. But still, you know, if you frustrate people, they're going to walk away from it for the time being. The only way you counteract that initial frustration is with a narrative and with other examples of people who are successfully going on it. So what are we going to talk to the people in Oregon and Kentucky and say, look, they can do it, but we can't? It doesn't help the people in my state.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, listen, people, it's, you know, in filing out your own insurance forms, that's also frustrating, but people need insurance. And once they get there, I think they're going to be in good shape. I don't think this is one of the things like, hey, you know, I went and I tried to sign up for this new service called, you know, Bezo and whatever it is, Bezo.com, and the website was buggy and I just walked away from it and I forgot about it. You don't forget about your health insurance. It's a pain in the butt, but you're going to come back. All right, I got to jump, buddy. Appreciate you calling on Friday.
Have a good weekend. Bye,
you
guys.
You too. All right, let's go. We'll finish up these IMs. Missing link, the question is, will humanity avoid Soylent Green as people by morphing into Cylons? Okajik. Hi, Sam. Just tuning in at the end. Some positive energy. Go Sox. Give me a Bernie Cabo. Now, I can't remember if it was me or my buddy Charlie who was at that game when Bernie Cabo hit that home run in 1975. But I remember it like I was there as a kid. I was 10, maybe. 9. It's looking good. Detroit's got two good pitchers coming up, though. But Backsicka, I'm a member. I love the show. The author of the aforementioned book on education was featured on Melissa Harris Perry's show, Town Hall at Education, 3 weeks ago. Left Ghost Marcus, my dad told me once if he had to do it all over again, he wouldn't have had kids. Thanks, Dad. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. I never understood the desire not to have children more than after I had children. I still, on balance, I would do it again. I might, I don't know. I don't even know if I would say, like, I would have the kids closer to each other. 'Cause this seems to be working out pretty well. Although, like, I've elongated, you know, what could have been like a 7 or 8 year period of the kids being sort of, you know, just constant work to now like a 12 year period. But what are you going to do? Morales 622. The joy and sorrow of having kids, it may be hard to contemplate at this state, but consider this. Grandkids will come at some point and they will be the reward, pure joy, no sorrow. And you'll look back at your kid's childhood with nostalgia, enveloped in a golden glow. The hardship parts gets forgotten, the joy remains. Indeed.
I never get that, actually. When I'm an old, grumpy man, I don't want kids running around my house.
Well, the problem that I'm concerned about is I had my kids late. When Saul is my age, I'm going to be 95.
Well, good genes run in your family, don't they?
Yeah, I know, but it's just, I mean, then, you know, now hopefully he'll have his kids a little bit earlier, so I'll be able to enjoy them a little bit. But
Saul, don't go into comedy or politics so you can have your kids early.
Right. Get a stable job. Jay Tingle, another documentary, Worcester. What's that smell? Majority Report sack. Andy Kindler, Obama bot has been furloughed. Please get him to talk about his experiences.
That would be funny.
What is that?
Obama bot was down for like 2.5 weeks because that would be really funny.
The whole time, I always knew that Barack Obama would solve all.
Medicaid expansion is a huge bonus. Here in Oregon, over 56,000 more people have been insured in 2 weeks, as International Howell. That's what I said. About 10% of the uninsured in Oregon have now gotten insurance within 2 weeks. That's pretty amazing. And the final IM of the week, ladies and gentlemen. When your son becomes 6 years old, you'll say life is good. The next day, your daughter will start dating. Indeed. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught. See the truth and the life of finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick. into years while I shifted in and out of.